Hi, welcome to another Coffee Time Chat. Today we're joined by Dr. Donald Wise and David Keston from Strategic Solution Partners. In this wide-ranging discussion, we touch on a number of areas and pose a few questions. Is the hotel industry in a race to the bottom? Is it at risk of over-commoditization where price becomes the only differentiator? Is technology taking away aspects of what guests consider hospitality and the hotel experience? How does the reduction of services and amenities balance with higher prices? And finally, is working in the hotel sector now just a job rather than a career? Really hope you enjoy the conversation. Let's get started. Hey, Don. Hey, David. Thanks for joining us today. Don, thanks for being on again with us after the last video we did. How are things for you? You well?
Excellent.
Perfect.
Beautiful day. Beautiful day in Newport Beach, California.
Lucky you. And David, how are you? You well?
Fantastic. And it's a beautiful day here in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, look, what I'll do, probably worth getting just some introductions before we get started in the topic. Don, you've been on here before, but obviously it'd be great to just remind anyone who saw the first video or hasn't seen it yet, who and what you're all about. And then David will come across to you. So over to you, Don.
Well, thank you very much. Well, we have been financing and selling hotels for 38 years, 20 years with CB Richard Ellis. I was fortunate enough to have the vision to have created what is today Seabury Hotels back in 1984 for that company. Ran that practice de facto for 15 years for 78 offices and 3,300 guys and gals. And then fast forward to 2007, Johnson Capital, a small investment bank here in Southern California, was about to tee up an IPO. They needed to get in the hospitality lending space. I created that practice, ran that for that practice for that group for 3.5 years, much smaller firm, about 125 guys and gals, 22 offices. And that eventually became Walker & Dunlap. Turnbull now has been functioning here in Southern California since July of 2010. And we continue to finance as well as sell hotels, all forms of financing from preferred equity to CMBS to SBA, to acquisition, to product improvement plans, et cetera, et cetera. So we're very much hotel business is very much in our DNA.
Certainly sounds like it. Thanks so much. And David, over to you.
Well, Trevor, thank you very much. As with Don, I think I've been around the block for a little bit. I've been in the industry for 40 years. Actually started out with Marriott International for 28 years, of which 24 were across international markets. My last two roles with Marriott were as CFO for the Asia Pacific region and the CFO for Caribbean Latin America region. After I retired from Marriott, I actually became CEO of a Wyndham brand in China for the Howard Johnson brand for the master franchisee.
All right, yep.
And then for the last 8-9 years, I've been working on the private equity side of the business, on the ownership side, doing asset management work. So, you know, I've seen this business from the brand side, the ownership side, the private equity side, the franchisee side. So I've seen a little bit of everything.
Brilliant. Well, I think the two of you, I mean, we obviously caught up a couple of weeks ago talking about some ideas, and we've kind of landed on just throughout a couple of questions, and we've landed on a topic to talk about today. And I pose the question to you guys, and I would like your thoughts on this. This is what we want to talk about, and there's a number of things to unpick. Is the hotel industry, aside from maybe boutiques, the luxury end of the market, but in that mass mid-market, is the hotel industry inadvertently going to find itself in a race to the bottom and a commoditization where it is so difficult to tell them apart that actually price is going to be a key driver, and it's going to be like go to a supermarket or going to a gas station. You know, there's very little else to tell them. It's just a room. It's a price. I've got to stay there. So that's what I'm throwing out there. Are we in a race to the bottom? Does hospitality no longer exist? Who wants to pick that one up? I don't mind who wants to jump into it. It's a big open question.
Well, I'll if you want, I'll take a start at it. I made a few notes, so if I see my eyes wandering, it's because I thought about this a little bit. I think we have to start with two basic benchmarks in our business. And you have to start with the definition of benchmark. Benchmark is a standard of excellence and achievement against which similar things must be measured or judged. When I did my first Hampton Inn deals back in 1984, 1985, the premise of a Hampton Inn was a perceived value. And I think that the perceived value that the guest experiences is still one of those two important benchmarks. Mm-hmm. The other still remains, this is tried and true and boring, but the guest experience. Mm-hmm. We have to provide an experience which is not commoditized. As you pointed out, Trevor, if your only competitive advantage is pricing, you've just lost the game. That is not a competitive advantage. So, you know, the quality of our assets, we have been preaching since our first webinar back in April of 2020. This is the perfect time to do that product improvement plan, to do that CapEx, to cannibalize that market, to pick up market share, to pick up those guests that aren't committed to the other Marriott and Hilton and other frequent flyer programs and so forth and so on. Mm-hmm. Cannibalize that market share with a nice shiny box. And you blend that quality of the asset with that guest experience. And that's, in my opinion, that's the answer to the riddle right there.
And David, your view?
Yeah, you know, it may not be a race to the bottom, but it certainly is a race to the middle. And I think it's trying to see who can get there first. You know, the industry has had so many headwinds, you know, particularly since the pandemic started. And you think about, you know, the pace of technology pre-pandemic versus post-pandemic. You know, technology is now really driven more so than any other element, the labor cost in the business, and you know how difficult it is to find the appropriate labor, and the fact that you know people really are struggling in terms of whether or not they even want to work in this industry long term, because you know it's never been known as you know a great industry for work-life balance. Mm. You know, people want a little bit more normality in their business. So I think that, you know, I said years ago, you know, when timeshare started, you know, really digging its heels in, and it really changed the model in terms of things like housekeeping, where, you know, they actually went from a daily housekeeping to, you know, weekly housekeeping. And if you wanted, you could pay for tidies in between. Well, with the pandemic, the hotels have introduced that. And I would think that, you know, in some models that housekeeping may not come back in the middle of a stay. You know, it may be exactly like timeshare. You know, technology is really trying to pick up the gap. And I think it's one of the things that, you know, is making this more of a commodity.
Yeah, and I wanted to, there's a couple of points that you put in there. It's funny, I was reading an article today where they were talking even in the luxury end of the hotels, where it is, you know, you're paying more, but you're getting less. And they used housekeeping as an example where mm-hmm. there would be a weekly housekeeping and you would have to contact front desk if right. you wanted something a little bit sooner. I just want to pick up on something that you said there, Dr. Don, around the guest experience. And get both of your views on what actually defines a guest experience, because from my, you know, from my side of things, again, back to more traveling from a leisure point of view, I like that whole hubbub and the seeing people moving around in a hotel and, you know, interacting with some of the staff and the being greeted and the checking bit. As a business side of things, I maybe didn't want that, particularly if I've just landed mm-hmm. from a plane, want to get in and check out. So just technology, I guess, in some ways could enhance the guest experience, but also could, if it takes away from a perception, back to that guest perception of what a stay in a hotel would be, does it actually take away a bit from guest experience and that whole hospitality element?
Well, I mean, give you an example. We were just came back from a three-day holiday over to Catalina Island, Santa Catalina Island. And fortunately, we have a relationship with the hotel. We have a relationship with the general manager. So maybe we got a little bit of a VIP treatment. But the first thing we asked is, can we get an early check-in? Mm-hmm. They said, well, we can't do that. But guess what? We will text you when your room's available. So we went off and had lunch and so forth, and we get our text and our room's available. Well, that's just a nice touch. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to linger someplace or drink more than we should at a resort or whatever. We just got back to our room. We wanted to take a little nap. We had a big event that night, et cetera, et cetera. So just the fact that they extended the invitation to text us when our room is available, you know, that's something a robot can't do.
Yeah.
That's a real-time guest experience that provides value to the guest. You know, you're a little bit tired. You've been on a ferry. You've been on this. You've been on that. Like your business traveler. You want to get to your room as quickly as you can. You know, that's something, again, a robot cannot do. That's mm-hmm. part of the guest experience, is that touch making you feel that you're important.
Yeah. And David, I mean, you're dealing with this from an asset management point of view. So, I mean, you know, you're looking continually at where does this guest experience come in, apart from it being something that hotels have to talk about, but does it actually deliver?
Yeah, I think the experiential part of it is no longer, you know, necessarily going to be delivered by the first person that you see in a hotel, because mm-hmm. the first thing you may see in a hotel is you know, an automated check-in kiosk, because there is no one else around. And you know, there are hotels today that really force that technology, whether you like it or not. But I think that, you know, to drive the experience in a hotel today, it's going to be less driven by people, but more driven by the experiences that people get in a hotel. Those experiences being, you know, what is the spa like? What is the pool like? You know, what are the F&B offerings? And then again, how well a hotel can incorporate their destination into that experience as well. You know, so again, I think it's going to be less driven, you know, by housekeeping, less driven by a front desk associate, you know, who's checking you in that, you know, may be your first point of contact.
And I just want to pick up on something you said there about the spa and the F&B, and Dr. Don, we've spoken about this because you're often dealing with, you know, the financing of hotels, maybe if they're trying to repurpose, pivot after the pandemic as well. So, I mean, what we're seeing is hotels having to adjust their offering, but I mean also from a new build point of view, I think you said before, David, you know, a lot of it is around limited service properties now. So if people are maybe reducing because of staffing issues or because of a change mm-hmm. of their segmentation, possibly if they're reducing the service offering, if we're then having less interaction with people in the hotel because we're using technology to help that, I guess it almost brings me back to that same point. It's like, okay, they may use different technology solutions, but if I'm checking in with my mobile phone, I'm checking in with my mobile phone. Doesn't matter what brand it is. If there's limited F&B now, there is no spa. I'm just in that, you know, that I'm in a box and I'm going to sleep. I'm trying to still get my head around where this experience is happening and what I'm actually gaining in that mid-market that isn't just driving me back to price. Because you see so many brands, I just don't get how you differentiate. Well, what is the USP of these hotels?
And quite honestly, I don't think the brands themselves can clearly articulate how they bifurcate their customer across so many different segments. I mean, being in the industry for 40 years, I couldn't tell you what 3/4 of these brands are supposed to represent. In fact, I was reading today that Extended Stay America just started rolling out a brand new brand called Select Suites. Now, I can't, for the life of me, even understand why you would want to do that in today's environment, unless you just absolutely positively thought that your customer was true to Extended Stay America. And if you didn't build that, they were going to go to Marriott or Hilton or Hyatt or somebody else that had it, because that's what they wanted.
And Don?
Well, the problem is you've nailed it, Trevor. It has become the select service segment. It is a commodity. It is a commodity. And so I guess we have to look at our friends that make, you know, 27 different types of potato chips and other, to figure out perhaps how other industries can figure out the answer to this riddle. but we have definitely commoditized ourselves. I mean, I can remember back when the Courtyard by Marriott first came out in the 80s, I was working with their people doing the site selection. And for another 10 years, people thought a Courtyard was somehow a suite product of Marriott. The message didn't get through that a Courtyard was basically just a big Courtyard, I'm sorry, a big Marriott, you know, without the food and beverage and the meeting space. So as David said, getting the message out there is challenging, but we have definitely, we have not only commoditized ourselves, frankly, we've probably over-commoditized ourselves.
And this leads
when you think when you think about, you know, the economics of building a hotel today, I mean, you know, why would you build a full service hotel if you could get, you know, pretty much the same rate in a mid-tier hotel that you could on full service? I was looking just the other day, Portland, Maine, the middle of October. Somebody was potentially looking for a trip there, and I said, well, let me take a look for you. And I was absolutely astounded that on a Saturday night, Portland, Maine, now, you know, there must be, you know, 50, 60 hotels there, but, you know, a Courtyard was $450 and full service hotel was exactly the same price.
Wow.
And you've got markets like that. And it's like you sit back and scratch your head and say, well, I'd never build a full service hotel again unless there was a specific reason and a destination that could support it.
Okay. That's two additional points I want to pick up, because if we're saying, yeah, okay, this is becoming a bit commoditized in that, or quite a large bit commoditized, is that going to potentially further enhance the offering of the likes of Airbnb? Because you've got a limited service there anyhow, you accept that, but at least there feels like a degree of individuality, differentiation, something that is local maybe to the community or the environment that it's in.
Well, that's actually an excellent point. The challenge that Airbnb continues to have, Trevor, and I'll go back to my Catalina Island example, because I was with some friends this weekend and we were talking about this. In many locations, there's no interaction whatsoever with a host in an Airbnb situation. And it's fine to, you know, get the key underneath the mat and whatever and keep it real low key and on the down low. But if something happens, you know, there's no person to solve a problem, whether it's plumbing or ants or pick a subject. And I think that's where that's where the Airbnb business model does fall down in some situations. But otherwise, as far as the experiential sort of experience, that's probably double entendre. I hear what you're saying, and I think that more than ever, perhaps that is Airbnb's competitive advantage, is it is that different sort of a venue, etc. It doesn't provide what you were talking about, Trevor, as far as that buzz, being with people in the lobby, all those kinds of things, but it provides a different sort of, you know, experience.
Yeah, and I find a lot more of my friends, associates, I hear them talk so much more now about staying at an Airbnb than they do staying at a hotel. It almost becomes their first point. And when I've kind of probed why, they say, well, to be honest with you, I'm paying a lot of money at a hotel, and it's just a box it's just a box and a room. David, kind of pick up on that point, get your thoughts on it.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think the advent of Airbnb, you know, particularly during the pandemic period, has really picked that up. I mean, when you look at the segment of hotels that did extremely well during the pandemic, it was, you know, kind of the suite hotels, you know. Just kind of leave me alone. And I think that's kind of what Airbnb is. Now, I do wonder, though, if Airbnb is just being a little bit too cheeky now, because I was reading an article the other day about, you know, the requirements that hosts now are imposing on their customers when they stay. Even though they impose a cleaning charge, they're now requiring a lot more tasks and cleaning prior to checkout. And I think people may start scratching their heads and saying, well, wait a second, you know, that's just getting a bit too onerous. Might as well stay in a hotel.
Maybe hotels shouldn't be getting rid of housekeeping then.
Exactly. Well, no,
David's absolutely right. I mean, the beauty of a hotel is exactly what David just said.
Yeah.
Leave the room, you know, you throw the towels in the tub or whatever your way of, you know, leaving the room is. You don't bother to straighten the bed. You grab your stuff, you take a quick look around and make sure you got everything, and you get the heck out of Dodge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now you've got to go through some sort of a protocol. Well, David's absolutely right. You know, you're going to get some pushback on that.
That'll build some friction in there, won't it? One final question, because I'm conscious you guys are really busy, but one of the biggest issues, apart from cost of living at the moment, but one of the biggest issues is obviously within the hotel industry is related to staffing. Now, my background, I've got a long background in recruitment, so it's something that I've always had a passion for, always been very interested in. And I was always such a strong advocate for the hotel industry as having an opportunity to gain experiences, different cultures, great career opportunities. Even with my children, as they've been growing up, I've always been a strong advocate of it. But now I look at it and I think, well, if staffing is being reduced because we're replacing it to get efficiencies with technology, and if we're not offering anything greatly substantial in a large, you know, if we take our bell curve of hotels and we've got a large chunk in the middle that are pretty much the same, pretty much offering the same kind of thing, nothing special about the property or the environment per se, is the hotel industry actually creating a self-perpetuating problem that actually now in a vast majority of hotels, it's just going to be a job like working in a supermarket, where we've had this conversation before, Dr. Don, where they can actually pay you more money. But I mean, if I'm going to a building with four walls and I've just got to do a job for 10 hours a day, you know, if there's not a great career for me because there's no longer those career ladders to move up, if I'm not engaging with guests and getting that side of the experience, which is what I like as a personality, and all I'm doing here is working behind the scenes and it just becomes a job, why are people going to choose the hotel industry to move into as a career?
Well, when you put it that way, I wouldn't either.
So to defend it then. You guys have been in and around it. So defend the other side.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I went to, I spent a couple summers at Cornell at the hotel school. And, you know, it was great being there and it was great being with my friend Steve Rushmore and so forth. But, you know, part of the fun of going to the hotel school was at that time, there were 44 different countries represented.
Mm.
You stepped in an elevator and you're hearing Swahili and you're hearing French and you're hearing Arabic and blah, blah, blah. And that was a buzz. That was kind of cool.
Mm.
And you take that away from employees where they're not interacting with people. They're not meeting new people. They're not doing this. They're cleaning the room, so forth. Your point is very well taken. And I don't have the answer to that one, Trevor.
David, I mean, obviously this is a challenge for you guys as a, you know, an asset manager looking at those properties. That must be a challenge on every general manager's and executive's desk at the moment.
Yeah. You know, career progression is a global problem. You know, it's not only in the United States, it's Europe, it's Asia. And you're absolutely right. You know, when you look at, you know, the demographics of, you know, who do some of the lower rung jobs in a hotel, you know, who are the housekeepers, you know, who are the doormen, you know, a lot of that is immigrants, and they're very, very happy to have those jobs. But, you know, if you look at a good example, the UK, you know, as Brexit came and they shut the doors to outside labor, you know, it was very difficult to find waiters and waitresses and housekeepers because, you know, people just didn't want to do those jobs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they wanted to be the front office manager. They wanted to be the controller in the hotel. But, you know, nobody really wanted to do those difficult tasks. But, you know, there is a labor force out there that is more than willing. They need to be paid a fair wage. But I think the industry really needs to think through, well, how do we get more of those individuals promoted? You know, how do we develop that talent that's always been critical in this industry?
And I think, again, you know, just looking at it from a point of view of back to my recruitment days when you always had to sell the job, sell the opportunities, sell the company. You know, you got to entice people now. You know, it's a competitive space. You know, when you join some of the dots up, there's sometimes when you're thinking, well, hold on a minute, you know, you could earn 50% more, and you know, your career opportunities may not be any better, may not be any worse. So I think there is a, it's an interesting, which is why I wanted to pose the question when we were talking about this before, what are we going to discuss? You know, I think the hotel industry is in a really interesting place, and COVID,
yes,
I think, has driven it towards finding ways in which they can find greater efficiencies and, yes, use technology to help some of that guest experience. But I do wonder, as you project forward 5-10 years, how that's going to unfold, how that middle area with all of those brands, no great USPs, same kind of service, box with a room, limited staff, limited service. I don't know. I don't know it well enough. You guys are far more versed in the hotel sector, but I kind of worry how it's going to unpick some of these challenges and actually make it more viable than just, as I say, just becoming a gas station with a couple of people selling on price.
Right. And I think that's, you know, where you get the advent of boutique hotels, and, you know, the definition of boutique changes, you know, so frequently. It used to be, you know, when boutiques first came out, they were, you know, generally the high-end hotels that, you know, wanted to be the Ritz-Carltons, the St. Regis's, but not on that same scale, you know, you know, because it was always felt that you couldn't deliver that type of experience if you had 600 keys in a hotel. You know, you're really no different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then you had Ian Schrager coming out with some of his brands, the Public Hotel, which, you know, then you brought in the cool element, and, you know, it could have been a basic room because, again, people were driven by the coolness of the hotel, the public space, the food and beverage, the bars that were there. And, you know, that was driving the revenue of the hotels. In fact, you know, you look at some of those hotels today, and depending on where you are, you know, it's not uncommon in New York to see food and beverage revenues greater than rooms revenues on a percentage basis.
Nice. And Don?
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And just going back, I was just thinking back on some of the comments you made earlier, Trevor. And there was just a story in USA Today I actually sent off to one of my editors that there was a trend ramping up to having an additional fee similar to a resort fee from the standpoint of room service. And apparently that is one way that hotel owners are trying to compensate our maids and other servers at that level,
okay,
with additional income. But the criticism, just as resort fees by this particular writer, was the fact it was not disclosed.
I think
something like 17% of the hotels that formerly assessed resort fees are no longer assessing resort fees.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's been class action and other on that subject. But this whole issue of an additional fee for maids, again, it's obviously an attempt by the ownership to solve some of the problems that you're addressing, Trevor. But again, it goes back to transparency, and the guest has to be aware of that.
Hmm.
He doesn't want that another $100 on his family's bill after they've been there a week.
Yeah, exactly.
As a fee to the maids that was not properly disclosed. So these are all challenges. These are all what I used to call Vietnam landmines.
And
we'll figure it out. We're a smart industry. We're savvy. We are hospitality. It's in our DNA to be hospitality. But you've brought up some tremendous issues, Trevor, that are very real, and we got to figure it out. And we're not going to figure it out on this call or this Zoom call. But as an industry, we do have to figure it out.
Yeah, and I think that transparency, just picking up on that last point, is important, because it's not only the transparency that it's being charged, but actually where it's going. Because I think there is also a sense that, you know, there is this growing separation. And this is, I'm going way off a tangent, well, not a tangent here, but this, I don't think this is just a hotel industry issue, but there is a general, there seems to be a general feel that, you know, corporates, the difference between the finance, investment, return on investment, making money, and actually delivering on what the product or the service should be. I think there is a sense that there is a divide between those two things. So to put that in the hotel context, you know, we're seeing whether it be resort fees or whether it be the room service fees, everyone's looking at trying to get more money out of the guest. Correct. But at the same point, what the guest is actually getting is less than they were paying, less than they were getting 4 years ago when they were possibly paying less. So this back to this perception to bring us all the way around to the front is, well, hold on a minute. I was paying $250 and there was a restaurant. There was someone there I could interact with on front office. If I had a problem, there's someone I could pick up the phone and talk to. Now I'm paying $400. The restaurant's just a bunch of vending machines. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've got to communicate through an app now. There's no one to talk to. I don't quite get how those two things correspond because it's the same property.
Yeah, well, that's...
Look at the most recent J.D. Power results. It's reflecting that, Trevor. Mm. The good news is that the comments, the status of the front desk and guest experience did not go down.
Right.
But other metrics of the most recent JD Power 2022 JD Power results say exactly what you just said. Hmm. I'm paying all this money and I'm getting these lesser experiences. Okay. The spa is either closed or operating less hours, etc. The food and beverage is boring. You know, everything you just said, Trevor, has just been reflected in the most recent JD Power numbers on hotels, on the industry.
Interesting.
You're right on. You nailed it.
David, you were going to say something as well.
No, that certainly is a bit of a conundrum. But again, I think that hospitality is stepping up a bit. You know, when you look at the food and beverage offerings today in a lot of places, I mean, we've recognized that, you know, years ago, food and beverage was, you know, a necessary evil to have in a hotel. and today, I think a lot of operators have recognized that, hey, if you do it right, you know, you do get people from outside the hotel to come into the hotel, number one. But you also have the propensity on, you know, a multiple night stay, if you've got a great place, to keep your in-house customer in once or twice during that stay as well. I mean, you know, it was always a thing. If you went to Europe, you went to Asia, some of the best restaurants were always in the hotels.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, when you came to the United States, you know, you checked in and you checked or you left that night because you knew that there was nothing in that hotel other than breakfast because, you know, again, they didn't put much effort behind it. But again, I think it's one of those experiences now that's changing the landscape of U.S. hotels.
Interesting. Very interesting. Guys, as we did before, we could sit and talk. I could sit and talk in ages for you, with you two. But I am conscious of your time, so I'm gonna wrap this one up. But I think we come to the conclusion that it could be on its way. It is becoming a bit commoditized. There is a potential risk, but I think both of you have either explicitly or implicitly implied that, you know, hospitality is still in there somewhere, still in the DNA of a lot of people in there.
Well, I hope that conversation was of interest, and thanks again to Dr. Don and David for joining us. If you have any thoughts or views on this discussion, please feel free to reach out. You can contact us via our social channels, or you can email us via insights@revenue-hub.com. If you like what we're producing, please do subscribe through the podcast channel you're listening to. And if you want to see the interview, you can find it on the Revenue Hub YouTube channel, and the link is in the podcast notes. Anyway, until next time, thanks for listening.